Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your humble host, Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. This show originates and is being broadcasted live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana. Right next door is Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. It's a friendly little tavern where friends meet to drink and sometimes eat. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase tanks, half tracks, or any other weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar. If you like, Tommy invites you to visit his big website, resist.com, and spend some time up there and look around. You can read news and views, listen to archive radio shows, listings of items to buy, information on where to send you donations, and just a lot of good useful information. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy another show from the Insurgent Radio Network.
Here I is, old Terrible Tommy, and in the bunker, in the Robert J. Matthews Memorial Bunker, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show, and March is due, and also donations for things like sending a few bucks to prisoners, inmates. People who have actually done the job and done the deed and are paying the price for you. That's right. Yeah. Well, it was unbelievable. Yesterday, I came out of the bunker like an old groundhog, and the snow was melting everywhere, and the sun was shining, and I took off my heavy coat, and I was in my T-shirt, and the snow was going away, and I thought, whoopee, man, we're on our way now. And this morning I got up, it's snowing like a son of a gun. Yeah, I guess that old temperature change at the North Pole and pushing that old jet stream and all that kind of stuff down here is really affecting. I mean, that's unbelievable. Almost a fall-like day one day, and then the next day it's back to winter again. Yeah. Well, it doesn't get much better for this. Than this, one of our associates sent this in. Yeah. Actually, it was a she-wolf out there. Yeah. She tells us a story that has a happy ending here. A Mexican and a black, a Muslim, and a redneck were walking together on the beach when the black stumbled over a bottle in the sand. He picked up the bottle and rubbed the sand off it, and the genie appeared. I can only grant you four wishes, the genie said. Since there are four of you, you may have a wish apiece. Pointing at the black, he said, since you found the bottle, you may have the first wish. The black thought it over for a moment and then said, I wish for a fleet of ships so I can gather all my people and take them back to our homeland, Africa. Poof, it was done. Thousands of ships appeared on the skyline. The Mexican, Mestizo, said, I wish for enough shibby pickups to take all my peoples back to our homeland, Mexico. Poof, it was done. Row after row of shibby pickups appeared on the beach. The Muslim said, I wish for 100,000 camels to take all my people away from this horrible country, loaded with infidels, so we can live in peace in Muslim countries and serve Allah. Poof, it was done. 100,000 camels suddenly appeared on the beach. Turning to the redneck, the genie asked, and what is your wish?" The redneck watched as the loaded pickups began to move towards the border, and then looked out to sea and watched the loaded ships sailing out into the sunset, and then looked at all the Muslims getting on top of camels and riding off. The redneck says, "Hey, just give me a Bud Light. It doesn't get any better than this." Yeah, I've heard variations of this, but that's good. That's good. That gives me a belly laugh, not just a simple guffaw, as W.C. Fields used to talk about it. Well, it's quite interesting what's going on down there in the Ukraine. It's quite a mixed-up mess. But it's interesting, here are some quotes I've heard here. Finian Cunningham wrote in an op-ed on Press TV website on Thursday that the new Ukrainian government took office in an illegal seizure of power by violence, which is true. Quote, "The unelected Western-backed regime, which Western media propagandized as the fledgling government of the Ukraine, comprises neo-Nazis who detest Russians and who have publicly stated their intention to commit the worst kind of violence against ethnic Russians," wrote Cunningham. He said Russia is entitled to not recognize the usurpers in Kiev and take action for protecting ethnic Russians living in the Ukraine. In this mentioning boot boys, and what the hell's going on here? Are these totally fake nationalists, and the press is calling them neo-Nazi? Or is there this right-wing neo-Nazi type people there? I know that the right-wingers, and if they're coming out hating the Russians, well, these couldn't possibly be National Socialists, and the history history can prove that. I have a lot of documents about that. So, but if these British and other countries, nationalists who are sort of pro-Nazi, say they're pro-Nazi, are in the hands and being controlled by the CIA against the Russians, then that they've come out of their closet and shown their real faces. I haven't trusted those groups. I felt that all those Combat 18, all those BNP and all of them are controlled by sinister forces as far as I'm concerned. But no one showed me any evidence that any of these people were truly National Socialists. I mean, anybody can put on a symbol on their jacket and say Sieg Heil. That don't make you a National Socialist. But it's quite interesting how they're using this term neo-Nazi, of course, that they've laid the groundwork for decades here in the United States, and anyone they don't like is a neo-Nazi. And now they're doing it in Europe. It looks to me like they're building a straw man. And in my communications with people in Russia, they understand the situation, I think, a little better than we do here in this country. So I have some recordings here of conversations on the subject, but it's up to us to make it as clear as possible that we have no connections whatsoever with these hooligans that are joining in with this rump state in Ukraine, and that there's no way that they can be National Socialists. And I've had this experience in this country, and I've explained it to you at least once on one situation where the CIA was in direct control of active Hollywood Nazis in this country. And that particular phase I absolutely know is a fact. So anyhow, we got to make sure we don't fall into that right-wing trap of and I fear a lot of the right-wing leaders may fall into that trap of going the anti-Russian route, which is obviously that's what the Jew military-industrial complex would like to see. Now, I have a new 13-page fine print summary, intelligence report from inside Russia that goes into a hell of a lot of history that I thought I knew and didn't know. And I know one thing in there popped out. It said that the Russians approached Rudolf Hess, while they were in control of the prison there, they took him out one day and had a meeting with him and wanted to place him at the head of a new National Socialist type party in Germany. And unfortunately, he refused, stating his loyalty to Adolf Hitler. Well, he could have done a hell of a lot more for the people of Germany if he'd have taken that offer and got out of prison. But that's something that I had never read before, and it's contained in these intelligence reports. It also talks about my friend General Raymer, and General Raymer was kind enough to autograph his biography and send it to me. And he had a lot more to do in post-war Germany than I had any idea of, and that's in this 13-page report. If you want it, you send me some stamps and I'll send it to you. I don't know, probably a couple of dollars worth of stamps or something like that. But I do find it quite strange that this report is referring to these guys that were CIA supported, just running around evidently beating up people as boot boys. That's an interesting term, since we had our own boot boys here that started in Oklahoma and the boot boys band and all of that stuff. So anyhow, it's just interesting. Well, recently there were some snipers over there in the Ukraine that started firing on both sides of the argument, and allegedly they are these CIA supported so-called right wingers. Now here's a phone conversation that was leaked out about that particular subject.
Sites.
Well, that's.
And it's really disturbing that now the new, so that he has some sort of, how to say, trust among all these Maidan people and civil society. And second, what was quite disturbing, the same Olga told that, well, all the evidence shows that people who were killed by snipers from both sides, among policemen and people from the streets, that they were the same snipers killing people from both sides.
Well, that's.
So that, and then she also showed me some photos. She said that has medical doctor, she can, you know, say that it is the same handwriting, the same type of bullets. And it's really disturbing that now the new coalition, that they don't want to investigate what exactly happened. So that there is now stronger and stronger understanding that behind snipers, it was not Yanukovych, but it was somebody from the new coalition.
I think they do want to investigate. I mean, I didn't pick that up. That's interesting. Gosh.
Yeah.
So, like I said before, among this new coalition in Ukraine, which illegally overthrew their president, there's a sniper team in there that was killing people on both sides to agitate and agitate and agitate. And the suspicion is that it's, of course, CIA money involved in that. So anyhow, for your information. Now, that information was leaked. It was a call between the EU foreign policy chief, Cathy Ashton, and Estonia's foreign minister, Ermas Paet, reveals that snipers in the Ukraine that fired on protesters were actually from the new coalition government, and the Western diplomats knew it. For your convenience, we've uploaded a short version, which I've already played for you. One reason I'm mentioning this is because they will not stop at anything to do this kind of thing here in the United States. As things get more hairy here in the United States, they're going to have people, and they can easily draft them out of the right wing and the Hollywood Nazis. into an idea that they think they're protecting America so forth to start shooting down people, probably on the progressive left or something like that, or even people of other races and so forth, just to start the turmoil and to try to pin it all on, see, that vague term neo-Nazis, which they call me a neo-Nazi. I'm either a National Socialist or I'm not. I can't be a neo-Nazi. I'm a white racial separatist. But you see, this can be easily done in this country. It's harder to do in other countries. They're a little bit more sophisticated about how rotten and corrupt the government is, you know. They know. But here, there's still millions of fat, dumb, happy people that believe whatever's on the evening news, and they can set up assassinations and all kinds of stuff, and doing it in our name, you know. So if you're out there and you're some kind of a racial person, separatist or a National Socialist or like that, and you get approached by what may appear to be some shady people about helping you against our alleged enemies and so forth like that, be extremely careful, or you may end up like James Earl Ray or Lee Harvey Oswald, for an example. Well, our biggest problem among our race is stupidity. You know that, I know that. But what is crazy about it is the people who are the stupidest think they're the smartest. Yeah. A significant majority of Americans support building the Keystone XL pipeline, should call it the sludge line, according to an ABC Washington Post poll released Friday. Well, you get more lies in the Washington Post than any other paper in the country. Despite relatively widespread concerns about its potential effects on the environment, 65% of Americans said the government should approve construction of the pipeline, which would carry oil from Canada to Texas. All they're thinking about is they think they're going to get jobs out of it, and there's not going to be that many jobs come out of it. And so anyhow, and of course that's not just straight oil coming down through there. That's sand, sludge, oil, crap coming through that pipeline when they use it. That is an increase over June 2012 poll that found 59% of the people supported its construction. Well, the oil companies have been spending a hell of a lot of money, and the politicians are all mostly going along with it. For many, economic factors outweigh the environmental hazards. Oh, yeah? 85% say they think the pipeline will create a significant number of jobs, and we already know that's a lie. Maybe max 2,000 workers part-time, and the job won't last that long. Although 47% said they believe the pipeline would pose a significant risk to the environment, those who said it's a risk and are still split almost evenly on whether it should be approved. You can't trust the public when it comes to the environment, I'll tell you that. Democrats, who self-identify as liberals, oppose the project by a 47% to 36% margin. But 51% of all Democrats polled said they think it should be approved. So what's the difference between the Republic corporate-kept Republican Party or the Democrats? Support is even higher among Republicans, with 82% saying the Keystone XL should be built. Yeah. An environmental report that the State Department issued. There's that State Department again. I'm telling you, that's the center of most evil. Not that there isn't a lot of other evil in some of the other areas of the government. The State Department, they issued in January, found that the pipeline would not significantly increase greenhouse gas emissions, although another study has argued that the report downplays the pipeline's potential impact. Well, the biggest problem is that they say there's going to be at least 1 to 2% leakage. It's not double-walled, and that thing could be either artificially broken or break on its own and pour millions of gallons of this slop into the water aquifers. 82% of the Republicans support the pipeline. Is there any greater example of stupidity within that party than this? Well, yeah, they just follow party line, party line, party line. I mean, you know, you in your state, you get these letters, these crummy letters from these politicians, and they're all, you know, they just send this crap out supporting the party line. Whatever the party line says is okay with these guys. Yeah. Well, let's tune into this vagabond, unorthodox, progressive guy, Malloy here. Let him vent a little bit here today. I think this recording might be a little bit not up to par, but I think you'll understand it.
About the hypocrisy, the stuff of U.S. foreign policy as it has been run for a number of years now by these neoconservatives who have no problem committing war crimes of the highest order. And yet, when the situation such as the one that has arisen now between Russia and Ukraine, these neocon bastards start screaming and farting and vomiting and talking about Putin is a war criminal, when we have more war criminals right here at home than there are prison spaces to house the bastards. But back to what Perry wrote. He's talking about the Syrian crisis. He says, though it remains unclear which side was to blame for the chemical attack, the Syrian government's guilt surely was not a so-called slam dunk any more than the Iraqi government's possession of weapons of mass destruction in 2003. In such a case, especially on sensitive matters of war and peace, responsible journalists reflect the uncertainty, not simply assert an allegation as so-called flat fact. However, since Hyatt was never punished for his earlier journalistic violation, even though it contributed to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, including some 4,500 U.S. soldiers, he is still around at the Washington Post to commit the same offenses again in an even more dangerous context, a confrontation between the United States and Russia, two nuclear-armed states. And what do Fred Hyatt, now remember who Fred Hyatt is, Washington Post editorial page editor, and what do Fred Hyatt and other neocons at the Washington Post say about confronting the Russians over the Ukraine crisis, which was stoked by neocon holdovers in the U.S. State Department, such as Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, and the U.S.-funded National Endowment for Democracy, which was founded in 1983 to replace the CIA in the business of destabilizing targeted governments. The Post is demanding a new Cold War with Russia in retaliation for Russia's relatively nonviolent interventions to protect pro-Russian provinces of two countries that were carved out of the old Soviet Union, Georgia, where Russian troops have protected South Ossetia and Abkhazia since 2008, and in Ukraine, where Russian soldiers have taken control of Crimea. In both cases, the pro-Russian areas felt threatened from their central governments and sought Moscow's assistance. In the case of Ukraine, a neo-Nazi-led putsch representing the interests of the western part of the country overthrew the democratically elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, who came from the eastern region. Then, under the watchful eyes of the neo-Nazi stormtroopers in Kiev, a rump parliament voted unanimously, or near unanimously, to enact a series of draconian laws offensive to the ethnic Russian areas in the east and south. Having fled Kiev for his life, Yanukovych asked Russia for help. which led to Putin's request to the Russian parliament for the authority to deploy troops inside Ukraine, essentially taking control of Crimea in the south, an area that has been part of Russia for centuries, or had been. Though the Russian case for intervention in both Georgia and Ukraine is much stronger than the excuses often used by the United States to intervene in other countries, the Washington Post was apoplectic about Russia's so-called violation of suddenly sacred international law. The Post wrote, quote, "As long as some leaders play by what Mr. Kerry dismisses as 19th century rules, the United States can't pretend that the only game is in another arena altogether. Military strength, trustworthiness as an ally, staying power in difficult corners of the world such as Afghanistan, these still matter, much as we might wish they did not," end quote. The Post also laments what it sees as a, their word, receding tide of democracy around the world. But it's worth noting that the U.S. government has a long and sorry record of overthrowing democratic governments. Just a partial list since World War II would include Mossadegh in Iran in 1953, Arbenz in Guatemala in 1954, Allende in Chile in 1973, Aristide in Haiti twice, Chavez in Venezuela briefly in 2002, Zelaya in Honduras in 2009, Morsi in Egypt in 2013, and now Yanukovych in Ukraine in 2014. And the next target of a U.S.-embraced so-called democratic coup looks to be Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela. About this staggering hypocrisy of the U.S. government where it concerns the actions taken by the Russian government regarding Crimea, regarding Ukraine. Perry concludes this way, "Perhaps the closest U.S. parallel to the Russian intervention in Ukraine was President Bill Clinton's decision to invade Haiti in 1994 to reinstall Haiti's elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, to office, though Russia has not gone nearly that far regarding Yanukovych in Ukraine. Russia has only intervened to prevent the fascist spearheaded coup regime in Kiev from imposing its will on the country's ethnic Russian provinces. Also, in the case of Aristide, the U.S. role wasn't as pro-democratic as Clinton's invasion on his behalf might suggest. Clinton ordered the action to reverse a 1991 military coup that ousted President Aristide with the support of President George Herbert Walker Bush. Aristide was deposed a second time in 2004 in a coup partly engineered by the administration of President George W. Bush. In other words, Clinton's intervention on behalf of a popularly elected leader in Haiti was the anomaly to the more typical U.S. pattern of collaborating with right-wing military officers in the overthrow of elected leaders who don't comply with Washington's wishes. Thus, the overriding hypocrisy of the Washington Post, Secretary John Kerry, and indeed nearly all of official Washington, is their insistence that the United States actually promotes the principle of democracy, or for that matter, the rule of international law. Those are at best situational ethics when it comes to advancing U.S. interests around the world. Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.com, which to me is an absolute must-read in light of what's going on. This morning I watched Kerry's news conference live from Kiev, where Kerry starts out by talking about the people still in the square in downtown Kiev. What's it called? Independence Square, Freedom Square or something? The people still standing around fires burning in barrels and people who only want democracy. Yanukovych was elected, wasn't he? Is that not democratic? I mean, we don't have that in this country. We don't have free and open elections in this country. We have various state legislatures who do their best to prevent people from voting. That was not the situation when Yanukovych was elected president of Ukraine. To watch Kerry, I had no idea. I really didn't. I had no idea that, and I feel stupid about this. I had no idea that Kerry was such an advocate for the neoconservative worldview and the neoliberal economic view that trashes other countries, absolutely destroys them. I knew Kerry voted in 2002 the authorization to invade Iraq and commit the murder of hundreds of thousands of people. Sure. I guess that should have been the realization that I needed, that Kerry was just another one of these neocon thugs who doesn't give a rat's ass about international law, except when he can claim to invoke it where it concerns something like what is occurring in Crimea now. But the audacity, I mean, just the unmitigated audacity of Kerry speaking for the Obama administration to say, as I told you he said yesterday, that Vladimir Putin was acting as though it were the 19th century instead of the 21st in invading another country with the flimsiest, according to Kerry, of pretexts. And yet, Kerry voted to authorize exactly that with the invasion, U.S. invasion of Iraq. I guess this is a part that just so totally, totally, totally has shredded whatever tiny bits and pieces of remaining belief I had in the moral authority of the U.S. position on democracy and freedom and liberty and so on and so forth. And yeah, I feel like a fool in saying that even at this late date, I still retained a few shreds of that, but I did. I did, and I think this event now with the Ukrainians and the Russians. And prior to that, the event in Syria, I have a friend here in Atlanta who is an engineer. He holds a PhD in engineering. He is from the Middle East. He is Palestinian, although he travels and exists on a Lebanese passport, since Palestine doesn't issue passports. He told me late last year that the situation in Syria was not as it was being presented in the American press. Now, the man I'm referring to is not a Muslim. He is a Lebanese or a Palestinian Christian. But he came to the defense of Bashar al-Assad in a way that I thought was kind of shocking at first, until he sent me some articles to read. He explained to me, because he's from that area, he understands it. He makes trips to that part of the world repeatedly. And he said, "You're being lied to. Again, the American public is being lied to." He conceded that al-Assad probably had no business inheriting the leadership of Syria from his father. But he said, as far as the gas attack is concerned, he said, same thing Perry said in this article. First of all, the number is crazy. 1,400 people dead? any death is a crime and a shame. But that number was a lie. And secondly, to claim that it was Al-Assad who launched the attack, Mbada told me, was a complete lie. So in a situation like that, and the man I'm referring to is an American citizen, but in hearing, you know, that kind of explanation, and it's much deeper than that. He talked to me for a lengthy period of time, but to hear that and then to compare it to what is being fed to us, the American people, on a daily basis, it doesn't make any difference if it's about Iraq, or Afghanistan, or Pakistan, or Syria, or now Crimea, or the Russians, or what have you. A constant, steady injection of lies and half-truths and distortions. What in the hell? How are we, the American people, supposed to make decisions? Well, we don't anymore. We don't make a single decision. We know this. We know this. There are no national interests for the United States. The United States is not comprised of a single people. We are not like the Brits in their heyday. We are not like the French. We are not like this is a potpourri of people. This is the United States is a mixture. It's this huge cauldron of people from all over the world. There are no national interests for the United States people. There are national interests for the corporations and the capitalists that own the United States of America. They have national interests, yes. But you and me, the people of this country, please, how long ago did that end? Or was it ever in effect? National interests of the American people is what? How many times have we provided the young men and eventually the young women to go fight and slaughter and kill and die and be maimed and broken and destroyed in order to further the interests of corporate America, of capitalist America? How many times has it happened? How many times will it continue to happen? That's the question, right?
Don't you wish you could hear that kind of talk from the right wing? Don't you wish you could hear that from Hannaby and Scumball and Glenn Pecker? That's not what you hear, is it? So you can't possibly find a home in the right wing, because they lie right to their teeth. You got the big liars running the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, and then you got the little liars that comes on down to say, well, we're anti-communists, I guess we're Republicans, so we got to be for America against those Ruskies. You can't think along those lines anymore. Those days are over. Those days are over. Now, AIPAC had their big meeting this week. Several thousand Jews slithered into Washington. This is absolutely a agent of a foreign power. If you think there might be a little separation between the United States and Israel. But the thing that you maybe didn't hear on television was that over 400 congressmen and senators attended. You know, it almost takes an assassination of a black person like Martin Luther King to get that many people, and I don't even know where they got them then. You know, over 400 congressmen came and bent their knee to Israel. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, though, there's resistance growing, and there was a an hour or so gathering this week in Washington about the danger of this Israeli situation. And everybody was there, a lot of people there, and Paul Finley was there, the one congressman from Ohio that the Jews crushed back in the 80s, I believe it was. I remember when it happened. Several other people, the dignitaries, were there that had been crushed by the Jews, and there was a whole raft of speakers really putting it out there. tell you, I thought I was watching a Boone meeting. And I say that in a positive way. So I'm going to dig that up for you this afternoon and get it ready and send it out to you, okay? Yeah. Well, two stories struck my interest this week about the KKK. The KKK. One was this guy that is up on felony charges down south for getting pissed off and probably half drunk and lighting a 3-foot cross. A 3-foot cross. Can you believe that? And now the court has put him in for examination about his mental state. Well, I think he should be in there for his mental state, too, but just the opposite. Anyone who thinks they can make any change in this racial situation by lighting 3-foot crosses anywhere, including a Negro or N-word's lawn, just aren't keeping up with things. And that's the problem with the right wing in the South. They just don't seem to be getting that education through to people, to where this guy's going to probably do a hard time for lighting a 3-foot cross. I mean, and the public goes along with it. The public goes along with it. Oh, they interviewed all the neighbors. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, it's terrible. Horrible, horrible. At the same time, your central government's guilty of killing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people around the world, polluting their geography and radiating their soil and everything. And these dumb shits, I can say, yeah, okay, for a N-word, a Negro, but for white people to be so stupid as to go absolutely crazy, and then the press, of course, feed on it. The story like that goes around the world, around the world. Yeah. And the public says, oh, God, put that guy in jail forever. But when it comes to the genocide committed by our government, there's hardly anything said. Hardly anything said. And then the other story I was reading was, this is, well, they did this in Missouri, I think it was, or Arkansas, a few years ago, when Tom Slob down there, yeah, Tom Slob, you could tell him I said so, too, got all excited about going out on the highways and picking up the garbage along the highway. Yeah, that's the way we're going to build the reputation of the Klan. We're going to pick up nigger garbage and spick garbage and chink garbage and even white Untermenschen garbage. And everybody's going to love us then. Well, now they're doing it over in Georgia. Same trick, you know. If something don't work once, well, do it again and again and again. Which is, like they say, proof of insanity. Now, who's leading these people that claim to be racial and very much pro-white, but their political practices are insane? They might as well be working for the NAACP or the ADL or the B'nai B'rith, the things they do. It's... please, Mr. Government, Governor, man, can I go out and pick up nigger garbage along the highway? And I think the governor of Georgia is embarrassed for them. Because he knows that all the Jew lawyers and everything are going to back this up. Yeah. They never back anything else up with racial people, but this they will. Because it makes them look stupid. I commented on this on the internet, one of the comment sections, and I said, is this the way Nathan Bedford Forrest got started? By taking his men out and with shovels and scooping up the horse shit along the roads and trails of the South? Is that the way General Forrest got his reputation. Well, that's the same thing that's going on here. It's just a new day, but same thing. If Nathan Bedford Forrest had started out by scooping up horse shit on the roads, I doubt whether his notoriety would be around today. So here are these modern day white warriors that feel that their only way of fighting the enemy is to pick up his trash. Now, if I was a nigger, I'd be sitting there watching black entertainment on the TV laughing my ass off. The same way in the other story. Most blacks would sit there and laugh their ass off if some guy burned a 3-foot little cross. Now he's going to go to jail for who knows how many years. I mean, if I were black, I'd be laughing my ass off. And most right-wing white racists need to be laughed at because they don't use any common sense. And if there's any wrong way of doing something, they're going to do it. And sort of like the Klan, even in the during World War II. We're 100% American. We're all for the white race, but we're all for killing white Germans. And bombing everybody. Even bombing the French and bombing everybody. Yeah. Did that make sense? I'm all for the white race. I support the white race. I'll die for the white race, but it's okay to bomb all those white people in Germany because they're Nazis. Oh, the insanity of it all. And I blame the good share of this on religion. If you want to know why the Jew power is so strong in support of Israel, all you have to do is go to your local Christian church, especially the evangelicals. They're insanely fanatical pro-Israel. They'd rather die themselves. They've told me that. I've heard Christians tell me that. I'd rather die myself than see Israel die. Boy, oh boy. So you people out there would say, well, you know, there's some good Christians around. Well, I don't know how many radical, pro-racist, lone wolf Christians there are. There may be a few, but can't be very many. I would say, and I would not be embarrassed about this, that the Christian religion, as it was brought into the United States, North America, has done more to tear down this great race than almost anything else. Has done far more damage than the communists. The communists didn't hardly do any damage in this country. And the damage they did was exaggerated. But the Christian religion, which is nothing but a remake of Judaism. But Judaism, the B'nai B'rith and those people, the elders, they knew they couldn't sell straight Judaism into Europe and the United States. So they cooked you up another approach. It'll be Christian. And then we can once in a while pretend we hate the Jews, you know, the Christian churches. Even once in a while we'll kill off a bunch of Jews, so that'll show that we're not really pro-Jew. Even though we're teaching the Old Testament to our kids every Sunday. We're teaching them all that nationalism of the Jews, which is phony nationalism anyhow. They lie like a son of a bitch. That Bible is so full of bullshit that it's unbelievable. And I can prove it. So anyhow, thought you needed to know that. The best thing the KKK of today could do is retire from the field. Please, just like General MacArthur said, old soldiers never die. They just fade away. Well, that's what the Klan should do. In fact, Bob Miles and Pastor Butler and I agreed way back in the early 80s that it was time to put the Klan to bed. It had done some great things in the past, but it was not doing great things anymore. It's become a tool of the enemy because the press used them as a whipping boy. Same way with the Hollywood Nazis. They serve the purposes of the Jew. They need people like that to run around and make a lot of noise and wear uniforms and light fires and all that. What would they do if they didn't have that? Just like the Jews, if they didn't have the Holocaust, alleged Holocaust, where would they be? Where would they be? And that's why I say revisionism, even though there's been a lot of good people, done a lot of good research, I think revisionism has been used like the Maginot Line was in France. The Germans just overran it and then turned it around and used it against us. Because they were able to get billions of dollars to promote their stupid, exaggerated Judas World War II. And probably were instrumental in allowing it, if not causing it, to happen. You can take that to Tommy's bank. We had such a beautiful sky yesterday morning, and the sun was shining, and the snow started melting and everything, and the temperature went way up, and I think, what a beautiful, beautiful time of the year. And then I look up later in the afternoon, and there's a goddamn chemtrail. Yep, another. They'd started already yesterday afternoon. And like I say, I keep hearing everybody bitching about chemtrails, but how many have, we got a lot of friends that work at airports, and they've got a lot of them are mechanics and all that kind of stuff. I don't know their names, but I know they're out there. And they know where these planes are and what's in them, and I think some of them have tried to expose it, but then you give it to the masses of these right-wingers, I guess, and give them that information. Well, what do they do with it? They don't do anything with it, because I don't want to get in trouble. I'd rather see the environment crash all around us than get in trouble. The left and the right are both that way. They whine and they cry and they go on and they go on and they go on and they go on. I do respect the anti-war people in the Vietnam era, because at least they put their money where their mouth was. They went out and did it. They did some pretty hardcore stuff. But those people are long gone, long gone. So anyhow, you got chemtrails, and if you don't like it, that's tough. Not going to do anything about it, so why keep writing and complaining about it? The same way with these illegitimate wars, like there was a legitimate war. The people, the public, they're not going to do anything about it. In fact, Americans are warmongers. They are. I mean, even down to the movies, especially the movies, they keep going on and on, redoing war movies. Always anti-German. Never anti-Jewish controlled Bolshevism. Yep. Americans are warmongers. And every president that's been elected, almost everyone, has been a war hero president. Look at Lincoln, how he's enshrined. And don't give me that shit, it's because he freed the niggers. he was a warmonger, man. If you get enough people killed, they'll build a statue to you, too, if you survive. Hell yes. You kill 500,000 people and they'll make a statue to you. But don't screw around with one or two. Don't screw around with a dozen. You know, you can't get your statue built that way. You gotta you got to kill hundreds of thousands of people to get the statues built. And you think I'm kidding? Just check history out. Just check history out. The most popular presidents are the ones who killed the most people. Look at Eisenhower, how popular he was. And he was just another homicidal maniac killer that was responsible for the killing of who knows how many people in Europe, because, you know, they were bombing other countries, not just Germany. So that's the kind of people that the American people want. Good Christian Old Testament type, see. These Christians are fundamentalists, and these evangelicals, they're Old Testament Christians. Wipe them out. God says wipe them out. And since we're God, we appoint ourselves God. Kill them all. Kill the sons of bitches. Kill the men. Kill the babies. Kill the women. Kill them all. And let the liberals and the conservatives sort them out. Well, that's about it for today. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. Oh, yeah, since I won't be here tomorrow, we want to dedicate today and tomorrow to the memory of George Lincoln Rockwell, whose birthday is on Sunday. Boy, there's a man who went through it. If you'll read This Time the World, you'll see how much sacrifice he made. He lost his family, his kids, everything else, fighting for the white race. And that's what happens with most people. Yep, that's just a sad fact. 14-5. Bye-bye.
Yeah, four, one, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car, I'll tax the street. If you try to sit, I'll tax your seat. If you get too cold, I'll tax the heat. If you take a walk, I'll tax your feet. Man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Don't ask me what I want it for. If you don't want to pay some more, cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Did you ever notice how few times you hear that played on regular radio? I think they played a little bit more now, but, you know, in the past, I know the DJs have been scared shitless to play that song. That's how intimidated they are. You know, people like to hear the Beatles, but, boy, you don't hear that one very often.